This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Muthan, and you're about to embark on the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
It's full octane Kelly and Ramya with all the fixins.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's on-air community, and everyone's invited. And now, the big man himself, Kelly McDonald.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday edition, and thank you for being with us. Ramya Muthan in the home studio in Toronto. So far, not a bad day?
Not a bad day at all. No.
Let's see what we can do to mess with that. Hear McGee on the morning show? Karen McGee from Ottawa?
I heard somebody who could resemble Karen McGee, yes.
You mean that whisper informant?
So slightly.
It was like that informant that calls up, you know, your phone rings, you know. Hello?
Now listen, you approach the bench and leave the package there.
That's what she was like. Karen regularly gets a bad voice at this time of the year, doesn't she? That's what she says anyway.
It's true, though. No, I vouch for that. I think in the last 2 years, she's around this time, she's gotten this voice.
She made a comment.
She should have a name for this phase.
Well, she made a comment when I questioned her about it through email, what was going on. Because it was actually, at first, I was a little like, uh-oh. Like, did she just drop a bowling ball on her toe or something like that? Nah, couldn't be. You know, why couldn't she get that when she came on here, before she came on here the other day and was so talkative? Like, she was just, you know, like, she said in response to my email, when I checked on her, they're loving it at home. It's nice and quiet. Get better, Karen. My goodness. But it is true. It's one of those things that's time of the year you can kind of count on saying, hi, Karen.
Hi, guys.
You know, so hopefully it's a terrible thing. We've said it to you when you've come on. Remember when you were really sick one time?
Gosh.
We'd have a team meeting and say, just stay home. Stay off
the
air.
Was it recently that we heard a throwback of me sounding like that? And I was like, who is this? No, couldn't it be me? I had sick days available.
Yeah, I think it was an Artist Corner repeat for sure. And you'd come on, you know, you were just terrible.
Oh,
it's all right.
Geez.
It's all right. At least you try hard to hang in there, whereas I hang in there and I get people saying, man, your voice sounds great. What'd you do?
I know, you do. Your sick voice is great.
Yeah, people say, and I tell them, what do I do when I'm not sick? Anyway, maybe you should tell people what's coming up on the show. All right, let's do that. Nutritionist Julia Karanchis joins us with information on vitamin D and vitamin D supplements.
Oh, good reminders. Mm-hmm. World Hearing Day is held on the 3rd of March each year, so that's tomorrow for us, Wednesday, to raise awareness on how to prevent deafness and hearing loss and promote ear and hearing care. And we're going to learn more about this special day with Hearing Life Canada's chief audiologist, Jillian Price.
Nice to have Jillian back on the program. Woodworker Jeff Thompson joins us for his monthly visit, and he's going to walk us through building a basic picture frame. We'll do that in hour two, right here on our show, Kelly and Company.
It's taken me 3 days to get over the initial shock of finding out that Sportsnet, in their infinite wisdom, has decided not to have a dedicated radio booth this year. I don't know what they think they're trying to accomplish. Are they just being cheap? Rogers Media certainly has enough of my money from the cable TV I paid every month for 19 years. And it's a darn shame that for blind people, radio was our favorite medium. At least it is for me. I'm of a certain generation. I'm not young. I am not a streamer. I don't have an iPhone. I'm a dinosaur. I have a flip phone. So I don't know what, if anything, what can be done about this, if I should even bother to challenge the Goliath. I'm just a little David from Scarberia. I'm going to miss Ben Wagner on the radio, and I'm not going to listen to the TV feed.
I have had couple of people mentioned this. So thank you so much for the message. Excellently put, actually, who feel the same way. I've had people tell me who are streamers and can go to the MLB app that they're going to listen to the visiting team's feed. But if you are in that position, it is a tough one. And I do talk a little bit on our Audio Vanity Card on the full version of Kelly and Company podcast. But it makes you stop and wonder, and you hope that Dan Shulman, who does the voice work on the TV side, we've had him here on the program, that with his experience at ESPN, doing radio baseball that he can lend that experience, which I know he comes from radio in the first place, just bring that back and do it. But you got other elements that I just wonder how they'll manage doing this simulcast. And I've heard simulcast games before. I know Rogers Sportsnet has made claim that it has stuff to do with the pandemic. I think of poor Ben Wagner, who's being added to the TV pregame show team to keep him in the mix. So I have to believe they're hanging on to be able to do this when things are better, when we're out of COVID-19 times. I hated to see Mike Wilner lose his job over this a couple of months ago, and we knew, let's wait, let's see what the other shoe that would drop. So I echo our caller, and I think back to when Jerry Howorth joined us on the show over a year ago in retirement when his book came out. And that was one of the things, Rummy, he said to us that many blind people had spoke to him about how he brings the game, what they do for them, and brings the game up and makes it so real and brings it to life for them.
Exactly. I know we got so much great feedback on things like that, where when we have any kind of live play-by-play description, pre-description, whatever it is, because it's for people who are super, super into it. You have that opportunity, right? It's for anything. Like for me, when I hear that there is visual art being described, I'm like, ooh, this is fantastic. And it doesn't matter, you know, what it is or where you can find it or however, when you know that it's out there, you're saying that's an opportunity. That's a way to bring in this community on another level, a level that feels like we should be there on anyway. But you're finally bringing us in on it the way that you'd bring anybody else on into something else.
Yeah, and it's really terrible. I have to give a big thank you to Ali Musa, who sent me a bunch of items about this, his big concern, and some reading to do on this over the weekend. So sad to hear it, and I'm hoping it is definitely something that is temporary and the value of a radio broadcast team is viewed here. Other value that we're going to talk a little bit about, our book club, Rum.
That's right. So we have our March book picked out for our book club. That's going to be on the last Tuesday of the month that we talk about it. And it's The Vanishing Half. This is the title for March's book by Britt Bennett. It's released in 2020, and it is available on the Center for Equitable Library Access, celalibrary.ca. It was recommended to us by our fashion contributor, Kia Osborne. And it's a novel about twin sisters, inseparable as children, who ultimately choose to live in two very different worlds, one black and one white. The Vignes twin sisters will also always be identical, but after growing up together in a small southern black community and running away at age 16, it's not just the shape of their daily lives that's different as adults, it's everything. Their families, their communities, their racial identities. Even separated by so many miles and just as many lives, the fates of the twins remain intertwined. That's why I think this thing will be super interesting. The book weaves together different strands and generations of this family from the deep south to California, from the 1950s to the 1990s. So we're getting about four decades of info in there. And like I said, we're going to be discussing on the last Tuesday of the month, which is March 30th. Feel free to send us your comments, your reviews, and also recommendations for upcoming book clubs at 1-866-509-4545. That's where you can leave us a voicemail and give us permission, of course, to play it on air. Feedback at ami.ca if you want to send us some written comments on the book, as well as audio via email. So those are some options you can engage with us for the book club.
The business that preserves the legacy of Dr. Seuss is going to stop publishing six titles because of racist and insensitive imagery. Reporter Julie Walker says books by Dr. Seuss have been increasingly criticized over time for blacks, Asians, and others are portrayed.
Dr. Seuss Enterprises said in a statement it listened and took feedback from our audiences, including teachers, academics, and specialists in the field, as part of our review process. We then worked with a panel of experts, including educators, to review our catalog of titles.
The six books are And to Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street, If I Ran the Zoo, McGilligan's Pool, on Beyond Zebra, Scrambled Egg Super, and The Cat Quizzer. So do pay attention, folks, because we're seeing a lot of this. And, of course, we're looking at A Sign of the Times, now versus then. So Nice to see these moves being made and being considered in conversations, of course, like this, started. We're going to take a break. It's Kelly and Company. And ladies and gentlemen, the big question that we've got next to deal with is how important is it to pay attention to the amount of water our pets are drinking? We discuss it with our veterinarian, Danielle Johnkind, when Rumya and Kelly return here on Kelly and Company. If you want to reach out to us on Twitter, Rumya is at AllRams with a Z. I'm at AMI Kelly Mack. You can send an email to AMI, feedback at AMI.ca, in case you have questions on AMI Tele, AMI Audio, or AMI TV. And visit the Accessible Media Inc. Facebook page, at least like it, and then you can keep up with what happens, the good conversations that are going on over there. As mentioned, she's Rumya Muthan. She's at the home studio in Toronto, Kelly McDonald, home studio, London, Ontario.
Once a week, we like to check in with our veterinarian, Danielle Johnkind, for Ask a Vet.
The human-animal bond plays such an important role in people's lives, and as a veterinarian, it's my privilege to help keep those bonds strong and healthy. I'm Dr. Danielle Johnkind, and welcome to Ask a Veterinarian.
Danielle, great conversation lined up for today. I've been looking forward to this all week and actually kind of doing some pre-homework by thinking, oh, maybe I should pay attention to this before we get talking on Tuesday. Because we know that water is very essential to life, of course, and we maybe talk about it more amongst ourselves and, you know, different seasons and keeping hydrated and things like that. But most people, most of us, we put out a bowl of water for our pets every morning, and that's kind of all the thought we put into it for the whole day. But we want to know, is it important to pay attention to how much water our pets are drinking? You know, how much is normal? Should we be worried about changes in our pets' water consumption? And does that even happen? So we want to discuss this with you today. We'll start with, does it matter what kind of water our pets are drinking? You know, is it cool that we just fill it up from the tap?
Yeah, I mean, really, as long as the water is safe for human consumption, it's fine for your pet to drink it too. Obviously, there's certainly no harm in upgrading the quality of your pet's water if you want to. So if you have an advanced water treatment system at home or buy your drinking water from a company that purifies it, you can certainly also give that to your pet. Some pets really aren't choosy and will drink out of ponds, lakes, rivers, and puddles if they get the chance, you know, and well, that won't always hurt them. I mean, it's a bit like playing the lottery, you know, there's always the possibility they could ingest infectious organisms like leptospirosis bacteria or Giardia and then get sick from these things later. So generally speaking, you know, I'd stick to the stuff that's safe for human consumption.
How much water is normal? And I suspect, again, obviously, depending on our pet size and things like that, but you can fill us in. What would we say is the normal amount a pet should be drinking?
Well, of course, there's a huge range of normal, you know, but as far as your vet's concerned, there is kind of a technical upper limit that we can calculate based on your pet's body weight. So that's 90 mils per kilo in dogs and 60 mils per kilo in cats. It's important to know, though, that this huge range of normal is different because of circumstances and individual variation. I mean, some pets just love drinking water and others really don't. Pets that run around in the sun in the summer will probably drink more than, you know, your couch potato pug hiding out from the heat in an air-conditioned home. As you live with your pet, you kind of get an idea of how much they drink. You might notice some variations depending on the weather, on the season, their activity level. But what you really need to sort of establish is a baseline for what's normal for your pet. So when they're healthy, you know, get an idea, how much water do I have to, you know, refill in the bowl? How much is missing and everything every day? And, you know, significant changes in that baseline behavior might indicate a problem. And you're just looking from that change from the usual. And if you notice one, you probably should call your vet.
Okay, so can we go specifically into that? What kind of changes might we see in water consumption, let's say if a pet is sick?
Well, you know, any sudden illness could cause a pet to drink less than usual. That could be obvious, as in like a pet with an injury that can't physically travel to the water bowl. It might also be more subtle, like a cat that feels very ill and is hiding out under the bed and doesn't really want to come out to eat or drink. And, you know, the concern with a lack of water intake is dehydration. The body's kind of pre-programmed to deal with a lack of water by getting the kidneys involved. And kidneys are great, you know, because they regulate how much water is allowed to go out in the urine. So when the body's dehydrated, they actually reabsorb the water they filter out of the blood and make the urine more concentrated. And when there's too much water in the body, they allow more water to leave in the urine and making it more diluted. So, you know, properly functioning kidneys allow the body to manage for a short time without access to much water. A lack of water intake is often more of an emergency when a health problem is causing a lot of fluid loss. So any condition involving diarrhea or vomiting, you know, can result in dehydration really quickly, especially when a pet can't drink enough to compensate for the water they're losing. And, you know, the other thing we see with some illnesses is actually drinking too much. When an animal drinks too much, they're also usually peeing way more than usual, too. Vets call these dual symptoms PUPD. And PUPD is often seen with things like Cushing syndrome. We see it with kidney failure. We see it with diabetes. And also with a behavioral problem called psychogenic polydipsia, which is just a fancy way of saying your pet likes to drink too much.
Oh. Wow. I wish I had a fancy name for things that I do that are just basically like, oh, he fell off to sleep. Oh, he's just taking a nap or whatever.
I think there is one for that. Don't they call that narcolepsy?
Yeah, that's true, too. Uh-huh. Well, that's so true.
Doesn't sound so great anymore.
It doesn't sound as long either, right? is there any situation, a health condition, where it would be good for a pet to drink more water?
Yeah, actually, there are, you know. Anytime we have a pet with crystals or stones in their kidneys or their bladder, you know, we really want them to drink as much as possible. If you ever did that science experiment as a kid, you know, the one where you had to super saturate a solution by boiling water and sugar. And mm-hmm. So what you tried to do was you tried to load the water up with as much dissolved sugar as possible so that when it cooled, the crystals would precipitate out of the solution and you'd get that yummy rock candy stuff. The same concept applies to reducing the formation of urinary stones. So the more water that's in the urine, the less likely it becomes that those dissolved minerals in the urine will precipitate out to form stones. And really the only way to dilute a pet's urine is to encourage them to drink more water. So, I mean, that's a good example of a condition where, you know, your vet will say, let's try and get your pet to drink more water because, you know, this is really going to help prevent a lot of problems down the road.
And exactly how on earth are we going to encourage our pets to drink more water? Somehow this is reminding me of our pills segment.
And well, it might. And that is kind of the trick, isn't it? And, you know, as you can imagine, this isn't always an easy task. And of course, you know that I always do have a few tricks up my sleeve. And one strategy is actually to feed more canned food. So if you think about canned food, you know, it's kind of mushy, like that pate stuff. It's much higher in water content compared to kibbles and dry food. So that's one way to get more water into your pet. But unfortunately, a lot of people will find it inconvenient or maybe too expensive to feed only canned food. So another strategy is to soak the dry food in water before feeding it. So, you know, if I have a patient that, you know, I want them to intake more water and they're feeding dry food, I always recommend adding 3 cups of water for every cup of dry food and letting it sit at least an hour before feeding it. Yeah.
Wow. You think the cat or dog would like, I'm not going to eat that. Like, because you'd think that they're smart. They, with the brains, they'd, no, this is somehow wet. What'd you do to this?
Well, I do sometimes run into that. You know, I have some dogs that are just like, it's food, whatever, you know, and they'll eat it or cat.
Oh, they're Rummy and Kelly animals.
That's right.
I didn't know you guys liked mushy food.
Just more that we'll eat anything.
I think it's just food.
Good to know. But, you know, for the pets that won't do that, you know, some pets, you know, will drink water that's flavored with something, like tuna juice, for example. You do have to be especially careful with cleaning bowls and changing the water a lot if you flavor it. We really don't want nasty bacteria taking up residence in your pet's water bowl. But, you know, another strategy that works great for some pets, and cats in particular, are pet fountains. So believe it or not, these are little devices you can buy from pet store, and they cool and filter the water as it recirculates through the fountain, and basically provides your pet with cold running water to drink from whenever they want to. And, you know, some animals, they really don't like the chlorine smell or taste in tap water. So if your pet hates to drink water, you know, you could try some filtered water that removes the chlorine taste. Or if you're like my husband, you know, he suggests going the poor man's route. My husband's a plumber, so he said if you leave a lidless pitcher of water standing for 24 hours, most of the chlorine will actually evaporate out of it without any work on your part. So I thought, gee, that's a pretty good tip.
Oh, wow. That is a good tip. Yeah. You talked about flavoring water, right? And I think that, you know, there's stuff that you would flavor your water with that you know that your pet already likes, potentially, like you're saying, the tuna juice. But is there something that you shouldn't do, or isn't necessarily something you want to flavor their water with because now it's something else altogether?
I'm not sure I understand your question. You mean like something that you shouldn't put in water to flavor?
Into water for flavoring, yeah. Or is there, you know, maybe just check in on what you're going to flavor your water with for your pet?
Yeah, like I would avoid anything that might be dangerous, like, you know, like raw meat juice or something, you know. But, you know, anything, like I say, that's safe for human consumption should be okay. And again, like I say, you do have to be careful about cleaning the water bowls and everything and changing the water frequently. You don't want to leave that, you know, flavored water sitting out for like 12 hours at a stretch and, you know, growing bacteria. That would be a bad idea for sure. But they don't make Tang for dogs.
I know, right? I can't give them Kool-Aid or something.
Yeah. Somebody should come up with that. That would be a really great marketing thing, probably.
Well, it's like those mind games you got to play on them, right? Like soaking down the food or now it's like, how do we flavor this? It's funny how those games sound familiar to games you play with humans.
Yes. This is why we have fruit-flavored antibiotics for children, right?
Right.
I'm
not
that
kidding
one.
You. There's things that I eat now that I'm like, this just tastes like that antibiotic I used to have when I was little.
or if your mother ever gave you Neocitrin, that hot lemon flavor.
Yes.
That's right.
I always think about this now as I take my Flintstones vitamins and in multiples of five because they say they're meant for children. I'll just take five at a time.
So good. Oh, man. Well, Danielle, this is amazing. As we said, next time you're going to talk about something that one of our listeners asked, and if vets have an overall view about whether we should declaw our cats. So you're going to discuss that next week. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Bye, guys.
Bye. Danielle Jeankind, she joins us every Tuesday for Ask a Veterinarian.
Coming up next, and I just mentioned the dastardly things, vitamins, but so important and so talked about of late. Nutritionist Julia Karantis joins us with information on vitamin D and vitamin D supplements. Real important conversation, folks. Let's have it after this. Welcome back. It's Kelly and Company, Ramya Muth and Kelly McDonald. Of course, carrying on the conversation of making sure what your puppy is going to do or your cat when it comes to drinking water and mushy foods. And we kind of resolved this, Ram, that texture seems to bother animals more than the actual smell. They'll gulp up stuff that we go near it. Oh my goodness. But they're right all over it. But mushy or dried out, they're not
they're
as fussy.
Yeah, exactly. But I was telling you that I do know a friend who soaks her kibble for her dog because her dog doesn't want the hard stuff. They want it to be soft and eatable. So it's a lot of dental treats over the years.
Well, yeah, I would think so. And I'm sure there's many listeners out there, as many saying, no, my cat is really fussy about textures and things like that. Because they know
that. Yeah, so share your stories, because Kelly wants to hear them. All the pet stories.
All the time. Pet stories. Mm-hmm. I just shovel them right onto you, and you can filter them through for me to hear them. Or give them to the contributors so we can get stories out of them.
Right.
Let's get to our nutrition segment, and we'll talk about how fussy we can be a little bit here when it comes to how we handle our vitamins as we bring in our nutritionist. Julia, come on in.
I love the world of nutrition. Join me, Julia Karanchis, as we talk about everything from food and nutrition to living a vibrant lifestyle.
Today, we're going to talk about vitamin D, and I have not heard, and I have to hesitate when I say this, we've had a lot of conversations over vitamin D. We've talked to Julia before about it, but over the last couple of years, going back even further and how it's one of those issues, especially those of us in this climate, what we have to deal with, but vitamin D supplements. Julia, you want to revisit this. This is pretty important.
I do think it's pretty important. Yes. Hi, guys. We have talked about this before, and it was a long time ago, and I thought we should revisit this topic, as I can only assume that with, you know, the lockdown situation and, of course, the current season that we are in, that it would be really helpful to do so, and also important, because vitamin D deficiency is a real risk, and even though our bodies are equipped to make most of it for us, we just don't get outside for long enough to do so, which leads many of us to take a supplement, which is good and okay. But I wanted to highlight, you know, how important that is.
So
I thought we should revisit.
Well, and it's a funny thing, too, because, and I know you'll get into this, amounts of it, because you always hear every month, it seems like someone say, oh, no, 1,000. Oh, no, 3,000. No, a man should be 4,000. So that is one of the areas I know a lot of people get confused about as to what kind. So let's start first by what do we need it for?
Okay, we need it for a lot of things. One of the most well-known benefits is its ability to help the body absorb calcium. So we know that it plays a role in bone health. It also helps support the immune system. And big emphasis on this one, it can help elevate mood, which is why I wanted to talk about this again, because I didn't really highlight it in the last segment that we did about vitamin D. But I think this benefit has a lot of relevance right now. You know, research has shown that vitamin D might play a role in mood regulation and warding off depression. And studies have found that those who were deficient in D had an increased risk of depression. And I know, you know, as a tangible example, my parents, who are, you know, elderly, and it's the wintertime. I mean, they're not going outside. It's the pandemic and it's cold. They haven't been outside in almost a month.
That's exactly it, Julia.
Right. And so this is important. And I did. I went and got them a vitamin D supplement. And speaking of dosage, Kelly, I'm like, take two, because you're not you're just not getting outside at all.
No. No, yeah. I take two plus my multiple.
Plus, yeah. You know, and I know that it's good for their mood, and anybody that's just trapped inside all the time, I mean, it's just not, you know, we need things to help us, I think.
No, exactly, so, Julia. And there's certain times of the year, you know, you're not going outside, pandemic or not. We're just not getting as much sunlight and things like that as we would otherwise during the summer. And
some of that's by nature to where we are too, Rum, right? Well, Canada's going to have this as an issue.
Exactly. Like most of us are having this right now between like November and March. We're all like, how many days are we actually spending outside, hours outside in the sun? And even when it's sunny, we're like, but it's cold. So what is the relevance? Like, how is it helping us with the vitamin D and mood regulation? It's a really powerful thing to think about when it comes to
it. It is, yeah. I mean, we know how it helps with calcium and the absorption and that business. But there are actually vitamin D receptors. So receptors are those little sites on the cell that accept nutrients. So we know that there are vitamin D receptors in the areas of the brain that are responsible for mood. And so we know that there's that link, because those brain cells have these receptors for the vitamin D. And if they don't have it, then, you know, that's when things are off balance.
Can we make this ourselves kind of?
Yeah.
And how?
Right. Yeah. So, right. Exactly. We know, and this is what we've been talking about. We know that as animals, which we are, all animals can make their own vitamin D, but we need that sun exposure. And we're talking at least hands, face, arms, and legs, which I'm pretty sure not, I mean, I am not doing it myself. I'm not going out with exposed arms and legs right now. And we need to have this exposure on this skin a few times per week, which we just don't get in the colder months. You know, the good news is that we know.
Here's, before you go on with the good thing, just want to always understand this. In the winter, we say, and again, we'll see some people wandering around and they could wear shorts outside in the cold and that kind of thing, right, which is those abnormal people. Does it just need to be the sun on you, or do you need that warmth of the sun as well?
Well, we know that the sun is stronger at certain months of the year, and right, this is a factor, Kelly. So I wouldn't say it's the exact warmth, but we know that the season, which means the position of the sun in relation to where we are in our
the direct
orbital. Yes.
Okay.
Is a factor. So we know, for example, that in July and August, that you can spend 15 to 20 minutes out in the sun at its peak and you're good. And then in those non-peak summer months, like May to September, you want to lengthen that time. So 20 to 30 minutes outside. Mm-hmm. You need those extra minutes. And what I didn't mention when we chatted about vitamin D before was that this exposure should be in the peak sun times. So, you know, after 10 a.m., I mean, don't go out at 8 a.m., sun's not high enough, and before 3. So in those peak sun times where the sun is in this nice position up above, that's when you want that exposure, is so during those times, 2 to 3 times a week. I mean, wow. I don't really have that kind of schedule that would allow me to do that. Long term, maybe here and there.
Wow. So you're really looking at this as in our case, in where we are, a year-round thing to keep taking your D. Because if you're working, you may, maybe in the summer you get a couple of weeks off and you take some time to go and be in the sun, swimming, doing things that you want to do outside between 10 and 3.
Yeah.
There's a lot for things to line up for us to get just a couple of weeks of it a year, let alone 52.
Yes, yes. But going back to my little bit of good news is that vitamin D is one of our fat-soluble vitamins. So there are some vitamins that are water-soluble, right, meaning that your body will absorb them in just water solution in the body. And then we have another family of vitamins that are fat-soluble. And vitamin D falls into this category. Vitamin E, for example, and vitamin K and A are all, just as a fun fact for Tuesday, are also all your fat-soluble vitamins. But we know vitamin D is fat soluble. What this means is that we have the ability to store it. So if you know you're feeling a little bit down, you perhaps do want to be taking your vitamin D all year long, but you do have the capacity to stock up on it in the summer, in those summer months, and store it. But that being said, we are still seeing deficiencies occur. It's especially come the winter time. So I wouldn't personally just try to lay out in the sun all summer and then think I'm okay for the winter.
Yeah, just generate those solar panels of yours and just get all your D panels going.
Yeah. Not to mention, I am aging, guys, and I do not want any more wrinkles on my face. So, because it's, it damages your skin.
Yeah, we'd have to be aware of that, right? Like getting sunburnt and all of this stuff, which
especially
is another reason
peak.
Why we,
Yeah, I mean, right? Because the damage on your skin is real. It's we've got risk of skin cancer. It's painful, you know. You want to be cautious of that.
Yeah. Should we talk about the ways to get it orally, like as we are talking with our vitamins and getting into our amounts and so on?
Yeah, we should. I definitely think a vitamin D supplement is a fantastic thing to take, especially in the colder months, winter and coming into fall and just coming out of spring. I think people should be taking them. The drops, I think, are the most popular because they're so convenient. And one tiny little drop gives you a daily dose, like a bare minimum daily dose. The unit of measurement that they use is an IU. It stands for International Unit. And so you get 1,000 IUs per drop, but you can also take it as a pill and as a soft gel. And soft gels are like, if you squished it, it's a bit squishy, whereas a pill is sort of that hard tablet, which not everybody loves to swallow. Right. So it would be personal preference on that one.
Okay. So none of them necessarily, those particular, take it into your body easier, absorb it or whatever. There's no particular rhyme or reason that way.
No, I mean, tablets have a bad reputation of not breaking down as easily as liquid or soft gel, because there tends to be a bit of a filler in a tablet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this is not a general rule, because there's a lot of companies that don't use artificial binders and fillers in their product. And so the tablet, you know, would probably break down in water if it was a good quality one.
Okay.
If you trusted the brand, because there's lots of people that are brand loyal to supplements because they know a lot about the company and they trust them. And that's great. So sometimes a pill, sometimes the tablet's okay. But I think if you're just starting out and you're new and you're not familiar with all the brands, because it can be really overwhelming when you start looking it up, a soft gel or a liquid is sort of a fail safe, you know. It's okay. You know, you can't go wrong with those.
Foods. I know you're going to talk about like the types of pills as well, or you know, supplements to have. But any foods that, you know, Is it enough to just get Vit D through foods?
Yeah. I feel like this is the Kelly question. what about eating it? Can we eat it? Cause we do want to try to get our nutrients through food.
Right.
But you know, and we can't eat vitamin D, but most people don't. And this is because there are not a lot of foods that contain adequate amounts of it. And so it is challenging to eat. Vitamin D is found in foods like salmon, halibut and mackerel, egg yolk, sardines. So they're not foods that are necessarily eaten, you know, daily.
Right.
You know, like sardines and mackerel. I mean, maybe, but widespread, I don't think so, which is why we're seeing these deficiencies. Beef liver is another one that you can get vitamin D from. Organ meats are pretty nutrient dense in general. And then sun irradiated mushrooms. So a lot of vegan supplements of vitamin D are sourced from mushrooms that have been exposed to the sunlight, which is super interesting when you think about it. And so you could eat it via the mushroom, which is also typically where a vegan supplement comes from, that or moss.
Okay.
But
what do we want to choose when we're buying that supplement? If we just want to go over that once more here.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Great question. You want a D3. So you want a little number 3 at the end, and that's the natural form of D that's the most active in your body. So when you're looking for the supplement, it's the vitamin D3 that you want to be purchasing. That's a good question.
Julia, thank you so much. Awesome talk. I know I get talking to people all the time and the amount of it. And I'm under the impression you can never have really too much vitamin D.
It's most people can't, but it does happen. So, because it is fat soluble, you will store it.
Okay.
So,
that's awesome. Stuff. Okay. Well, next week we're going to discuss omega-3 versus omega-6.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Boy, that sounds like a battle. Omega-3 versus omega-6. Julia joins us every other week opposite our wellness segment with Francis Wong here on Kelly and Company. Coming up next, World Hearing Day is held on March 3rd each year to raise awareness on how to prevent deafness and hearing loss and promote hearing care. We learn more with Hearing Life Canada's chief audiologist, who has been on the program with us before, Jillian Price, after this break. AMI Audio is available from your television. SaskTel customers, channel 555 in Saskatchewan. And Eastlink, channel 887 in Atlantic Canada. Visit AMI.ca/schedules for a list of channel locations in your area. I'm Kelly McDonald with Ramya Muthan.
Well, we're celebrating and recognizing some great days this week. World Hearing Day is held on the 3rd of March each year to raise awareness to how to prevent deafness and hearing loss and promote ear and hearing care. So we're going to be speaking with Hearing Life Canada's chief audiologist, Jillian Price. Welcome back to the show, Jillian.
Thank you so much for having me.
Always a pleasure and always interested to keep with these conversations. So tell us and remind us again, what is World Hearing Day?
Yeah, so it is an annual awareness event. So, you know, we have this date every year and we use this to, you know, highlight, to spotlight issues going on globally with hearing and hearing loss, to educate people about hearing loss and just, you know, really bring it into the spotlight because it is something that often goes unnoticed. So the World Hearing Organization uses this day to really spotlight and educate people. And we're happy at Hearing Life to be part of that.
Why is it important to really acknowledge and recognize this day? Is it mainly about getting that, hey, everyone, pay attention and this is something you need to keep in mind because it's the kind of thing that we don't talk about enough. We think, oh, well, hearing loss is usually an accident related or someone gets older and that's not certainly at all true.
Absolutely. I think number one is just the importance of hearing across your life course. That it isn't something that only affects people that are older. It is something that can affect you at any age. And so that's one thing is the prevalence. I mean, it's the numbers in this report that is coming out tomorrow highlight that 466 billion people worldwide actually suffer from hearing loss. And locally in Canada, you know, almost half of Canadians over 60 have some form of hearing loss. So this is something that affects a lot of people worldwide, all, you know, ages, gender. It's something that we all need to be thinking about.
It's interesting, Jillian, how it seems that people don't recognize as much as both of us are vision impaired. We hear more of people, the fear of, oh my goodness, my eyesight, than we hear of people, their hearing loss, so which seems to lead to not having these conversations.
Absolutely. I think for a lot of people, it's the, that it's invisible, that when you have hearing loss, it's not something that, you know, there's a marker on you to say, I have some hearing loss. Whereas with vision, it's more noticeable when these things happen. And when you start to wear glasses, everybody else knows as well. So because it typically happens very gradual over one's life for a lot of people, it is something that maybe you're not even aware that you're having a problem. And I think what this day is trying to highlight is that we all need to get our hearing checked. We all need to make it top priority because it's one of our five senses and it's so important. So, you know, step one is just get your hearing checked. And at Hearing Life, we do offer these tests free. We're supporting the cause and we want to participate in this day. So we're offering free hearing tests. You can come on in. It's easy, painless. And even through the pandemic, we are an essential service. So you can come in, make an appointment ahead of time. It's by appointment only right now, but we can give you that information and give you your next steps. So it's all about awareness and really understanding what your hearing is and following it through your life.
It's something that you might be afraid of, right? A hearing test and you don't really want to know. Maybe you've started to notice some changes in your hearing and you're like, oh gosh, the reality might hit and something that you might postpone. We say the same for eye exams. You know, you're supposed to be checking your eyes every year. That's
right.
Anybody really, but a lot of us are like, oh, my eyes are fine. But the thing is, we want to know, Jillian, how hard is it? Like the actual hearing test, the process, do you mind walking us through it?
For sure. Yeah, I think you're right. Not everybody knows what even happens. It is so simple to get your hearing checked. And like I mentioned, it is painless. The appointment takes less than an hour and you're going to have those results right away. So your hearing healthcare provider will be able to tell you on the spot if there are any issues. And technology is amazing. And the treatment options we have available now would really blow your mind, you know? And so again, it's just not general common information for a lot of people. And there is that stigma really associated with hearing loss still that makes people nervous, and it just might not be information that you know, are excited to get, but it doesn't mean that it's not important. And because we're relying so heavily on our hearing right now through this pandemic, with us being socially isolated and not being able to be in person present with people, we really have to rely on our hearing even more. So this is the time, you know, this is the time to take action and to see what's going on with your hearing. And again, so simple. You can book that test. It's free of charge, and come in and get the information, and you'll be better off for it.
I love that at this time with the pandemic, we've heard people talk about how the world, different things going on, different areas. But one of the things you generally hear about is, gee, things sound different. And that's really something to think about when wanting to value our hearing. You want to talk about some of the themes that there might be out there to mark World Hearing Day?
Yeah. So Hearing Life in particular, we're very excited because this year's a little bit different in that there is it basically marks the launch of the very first World Report on Hearing. So this is a special year because of that. So we thought we would do a few special things. I myself will be hosting a Facebook Live event tomorrow, and I'm going to take everybody through this 16-page report that is being released tomorrow, and highlighting, you know, the recommendations that have been made from this report. So I will be educating anybody who is interested, and also just going over a few tips to help us through this pandemic in relation to our hearing, really getting the most out of our interactions, whether it be that Zoom call that you have to do because you don't have the choice,
yes.
You know, the millionth meeting that you've done virtually if you're working from home. So just some tips to help you maximize your hearing and make sure that you're not fatiguing yourself, because that's a real thing. So we're going to be doing that. I had mentioned we are offering free hearing tests. We want to support and test as many people as we can. And we're also going to be doing, for the first time ever, our Hearathon. So we're going to be raising funds, and we're doing that by just basically anybody who wants to get in on spreading the word through social media. So if you share, or if you like, or if you comment, or if you use hashtags, then you will be supporting the cause, and Hearing Life will donate $1 to every social media post that we get, actually anytime this week. So, and those funds are going to be used to help those who are in need and to get free hearing aids to those individuals who otherwise could not afford them. So we're really excited about that.
That is huge. And like we've been saying to a lot of people we've been having on this show, Jillian, it's awesome to see such creative methods to keep this conversation going and the recognition on March 3rd. We don't have much time yet, but I'm wondering if you're able to tell us about Zoom meetings and accessibility when it comes to hearing and people who have hearing loss. How can we make Zoom meetings more accessible in this context? Because we've had a lot of Zoom meetings, and I'm sure a bit more to come.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to give you some tips. And I personally have been on many, many Zoom meetings. I think for someone who has hearing loss or suspects hearing loss, the first thing you want to do is you want to choose your space wisely, for sure. You want to make sure that the lighting is good, that you're in a quiet place, that the quality of the, you know, the webcam and the microphone and the earphones that you're using is good quality. Invest in something, because, I mean, the reality is I don't think this pandemic is going away anytime soon. So we have to get used to this might be the way we communicate with our friends, family, and work for quite a while. So make the investment and make sure you have, you know, really good working equipment. And, you know, there's closed captioning, so you can activate or turn the closed captioning on for the meetings or conversations, which will really help because it'll give you the visual cues that we're lacking when we're not face-to-face with somebody. So that's one thing that can be very helpful. Give yourself breaks. Zoom fatigue is a real thing. And so you don't want to be sitting in front of that screen for long periods of time. You want to give yourself a break, give your ears a break, give your eyes a break. So those are some of the tips I think would be helpful for people who are sitting in front of a screen for long periods of time with, you know, meeting after meeting.
Superb. That is excellent. Jillian, can you give us once more as we wrap up here, where can we learn more about World Hearing Day?
Yes, thank you. So visiting our website would probably be the easiest. That's hearinglife.ca. You can go to our Facebook page. We're on all social media, so Instagram, you know, Twitter, Facebook. You'll find us at any of those social media platforms. But our website is sort of your one-stop shop to get all the information and links to participate in the event for tomorrow.
Thank you, Jillian, and I hope that there's a lot of participation.
Yes, I do too. Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. We were speaking with Hearing Life Canada's chief audiologist, Jillian Price, and we're talking about World Hearing Day, which is tomorrow, Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021.
We'll take a break to reset ourselves for the next hour of the program. And in that hour, let's check in with our friends from W. Ross McDonald School in Brantford. Woodworker Jeff Thompson walks us through building a basic picture frame, but up next, St. John's Community Reporter Kim Thistle has some highlights for us from Newfoundland and Labrador in her community report. Stand by.
When you tune into the show in the middle of an interview.
In the letter it said, the best part of the day was when the goat pooped and it looked like a machine gun. Right? So, you know, so that's what they remember.
You're listening to Kelly and Company on AMI Audio.
The Tuesday performance of Kelly and Company. Rabia Bluth and Kelly McDonald, the hosts of the program. You like that performance?
Yeah.
People think we do that.
It feels like deja vu, though.
Why, you think I said that before?
I feel like it. No, last week?
Let me check here. No, if I did.
Sure?
No, sorry, August 8th or something like that it was said here.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm in a rotation here.
We both have no idea, right?
That's right. The top of the hour rotation says it was used on August.
It's a 70-week rotation.
Yeah. Well, it just pops up once in a while, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being with us wherever you are out there. Appreciate your time wherever you're listening in around the world on the program on Tuesdays and Thursdays. One of the cool things we get to do is visit with our community reporters. These guys come on and tell us a little bit about what's going on in their neck of the woods, and we get a review of maybe something that's happened, going to happen, something really neat that we didn't know about the air. It's time to bring Kim Thistle. She joins us with news from St. John's, Newfoundland, and Labrador. Hello, Kimmy. How are you?
I'm doing good. I did the performance. I hope you're not expecting something. I cannot sing. I might be able to dance a little tiny bit, make up a dance.
Well, you're on once you a month, so we're going to call it a walk-on that you do.
Oh, okay. I get on a performance. What's happening? Yeah, I'm good. I just got in from shoveling snow, so we're good.
Oh, my goodness, Kim. And you know what? Just in time for your aside here, where you're going to tell us a little bit of a personal experience of keeping busy. Now, as the director for this show, make sure you do some passion in here. Like, this is serious now.
Serious about what I'm doing to keep myself busy.
Yeah.
Is that what you're telling
me? That's right.
Oh. Yeah, man. Intense, serious.
Okay. Oh, intense, serious. Do you think I can do that? I don't. Oh. You're really.
Kim,
that's my performance.
Look,
that's
you just came from shoveling, doing that heavy duty scene and throwing snow all over the place. So I know you're ready for that serious moment in the performance.
No, I can. I can do it. I'm up for it.
All right.
The challenge accepted.
All right. What do you have for us?
Well, the first thing I'll start off is the research with the CNIB team. So I'm excited with this, and I'm going to read it out just to be sure, because I don't want to give false information or incorrect, you know what I'm saying, for our listeners. So the CNIB research team they're set up, and they're asking for blind, partially sighted, deaf, blind Canadians about the job interview process. So we know that Canadians who are blind or partially sighted underemployed compared to the general population. And one of the significant barriers people living with sight loss face in the job search process is navigating the typical job interview. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I haven't gone on job interviews since I've lost, you know, decreased vision.
It's been a while.
To address this challenge.
Yeah.
Right. So to address this challenge, we are conducting a project to gather information about the experience of people with sight loss in the job interview process, which is fabulous. And we would use this data to inform machine learning approaches to develop augmented reality teaching tools for persons with sight loss and hiring managers to navigate the job interview successfully. So they're looking for research participants who are working age people with sight loss to share their experiences to help us achieve this goal. So for more information, I do have it on the website, but there's an email, and it's oturesearchteam@gmail.com. But that is on the website. So I think it's a very worthwhile endeavor. I think, you know, to take the input from blind, partially sighted, deaf-blind Canadians about the interview process, and then I guess augmented reality is a fancy way of saying, you know, putting it on the computer and stuff. Right? I don't know.
I think that's when they're making it. You're probably doing it where you have somebody to do that. That whole feel. I've watched some of the augmented reality stuff that they have at the foundation up here, and just where you actually can make it as real, close to real. I mean, sure, you know, you're on a computer.
Isn't that amazing? Like, I'm blown away all the time with technology. So
it's amazing.
If anybody though, it is. But to use that technology and take in, you know, feedback and personal experiences from, you know, blind and partially sighted, deaf, blind, working age individuals, I think it would be really beneficial. So I'm encouraging everyone if they can. And the deadline's March 26th. They wanted to have all the data collected, right? So if anyone can do that, that would be wonderful. I mean, even you guys, Kelly and Rami, or anybody in your department, I'm sure.
Well, I was just going to say, Kim, I wish I knew about this before I went on the job interview last week I went on. And actually, I haven't had a job interview in a long time.
Illegal questions.
I just tend to tell people how to do a job interview. It's not like I actually have any lived experience.
No, I'm sure you have your wealth of knowledge anyway.
All augmented. Augmented reality.
It's real time. Oh, my. So the second thing I do want to talk about, I mean, we are back into lockdown here again in Newfoundland, Labrador. And I do want to share, our mental health, you know, whether we have COVID fatigue, you know, we're in our homes, barred up again. And you know, I hate using the word barred up, but I guess it's a perspective, how we view it. So there's not to be, I don't want anyone being alone and being realized that the Channel Warm Line is available here in Newfoundland, Labrador. And what that is, Channel itself is a group of, is peer run for support, peer to peer. So peer support, they have lived experiences and depression, anxiety, addictions, you name it. And you get to speak to someone who's been through what you're going through. It's not a counseling service, but it's someone to listen to you. It's recovery with respect. And they have wonderful programs. Like I said, the Warm Line is available. And the number is 1-855-753-2560. That's if, you know, outside the metro area, St. John's area. And then locally is 753-2560. They're fabulous staff. They offer workshops, like family workshops and individual, you know, one-on-one get-together. They have virtual groups. You know, everything has gone virtual now, but you still can, you know, get together. I think it's on a Wednesday night. It's best to check the Channel website or their Facebook page to get the exact schedule, or call and find out. So, I mean, it's like we're all coping differently with, you know, the pandemic, or maybe you just need someone to talk to. I mean, there's no shame or embarrassment in, you know, like times are tough sometimes, and our anxiety can be increased, or our depression can start, or we could develop anxiety based on everything in the news and whatnot. So I'm just encouraging, just a reminder that there is support out there, and it's free and confidential.
Yeah, no, it's definitely true. And Kim, you've put in all the things that are really, really worth mentioning, which is that we deal with things in different ways. We talk to people in different ways. We're experiencing it at different rates as well, the effects of the pandemic, right? You know, some of us were like, oh, you know, I can't really relate because I'm having a good time at home or something, or because I live right. with people and you other people don't or whatever. But right. there's right. lots of, you know, things to consider, which is amazing. And you wanted to also, we're putting this up on the blog as well, but do you want to mention some of the ways that you've been coping yourself or different things that you've been doing to keep busy during okay. the lockdown?
Yes, no, because I have to be honest, like I think I've mentioned before, I found last year really, really difficult. Like it was just a big mm-hmm. shock. I just went into, I don't know what to say, shock. Like I just numb, listless and couldn't function. Some days were better than others. Most were mostly, I do a workout and then that's the rest of it. I could do the rest of the day. And then it would be 5 o'clock and it's like, oh my goodness, where'd the day go, right? And I admired people who could do, you know, yeah, I made, you know, planted a flower garden and I made, you know, 10,000 crafts. I just couldn't get myself moving. And I felt bad or shame or guilty. And I just realized that was my process for going through. This time around, like we may not be in lockdown as long. I mean, I don't want to, I'm not speculating, you know, we're hoping our numbers are declining again. But I came in with a different mindset. And I guess part of it is understanding myself more, being a bit more prepared, knowing what's involved. And a lot of things that I have listed, that's not things that I do every day. Like I got a lot of things that I have listed there, but that doesn't mean I do it every day. And I have to be kind to myself and say, okay, I got one thing done today. That's great. And then another day I'm like superwoman and I got about 10 things done. You know, I made baked cookies and I did exercise and I meditated. So a lot of what I have chosen, like for me, is getting back to, I need to look after me, my mental health, my spiritual health, my physical health. So I do workout, meditation, yoga, listen to your, you know, the podcast, listen to AMI, watch some, you know, repeat shows, what do you call them, you know, the app. I'm involved with the CNIB, with the volunteering. So when our group starts up again, my barbershop hasn't opened up again, but my barbershop is not open yet, but we will, I guess it would be open again eventually when he chooses, because apparently his stylist during the lockdown, that would be me, might have made a new hairline that wasn't intended. So when he went back to his current stylist, they got to fix up the work. They got to fix his hairline and grow it out again. So we're not sure if he's going to be looking for the service again this time.
Well, you know what to do. It's
trial
not.
And error, right?
Yeah. Like, I don't know, like, yeah. Apparently, you know, we're not really seeking the services. We're hoping that like it's not going to stay too long.
Because was it not a 2-in-1 package when it was first offered?
Yes, I know. I mean, like I said, it was a good package. I mean, I thought it was good, but apparently, when he went back to his stylist, oh. I mean, it's a bit uneven, and the lines have to be. The main line has to be grown back again. Now, it's okay occasionally, like longer piece to cut it out. I mean, your hair grows back.
Well, Kim, you're using the wrong pot on your head. That's what happens. It's lopsided.
I should have done a tiny little bowl, right?
Exactly. We'll get you back to your old Pyrex stuff, Kim. Get all that out.
Oh my gosh. I got a square bowl in the house. Maybe that might help.
Exactly.
You know, little. But anyway, you know. Even though it's a list of things that you'll post up there, please be aware that I'm not doing that every day. But the days that I do feel good and I'm getting out for a walk or I check in with a friend, and I love my friends at the CNIB, he started going to, I don't know if I mentioned this, he goes through his contacts, he got all these Facebook friends, and he realized I hadn't talked to these people in years. So he'd randomly call people up. He started that the first part last year. And everybody was like, oh my gosh, so great to hear from you. And they're catching up on the news and things. Like actually picking up the phone and having a conversation. So, you know, there's things to do with finding what you're engaged. Like I do a daily photo challenge. Some days I do it, some days I don't. It depends. But I try to have things that I look forward to. And I'm a wonderful note taker on my table. There's a list of things to do every day.
That's right.
This might carry on till the next day.
That's what I was just going to say. As time goes on in the day, Kim, you look at that list and say, tomorrow. I'll save some paper and just hold this off to tomorrow to do. Thanks, Kim.
And being kind to ourselves, right?
You mm-hmm. bet. That's the number one thing. Thanks, Kim. Community reporter Kim Thistle telling us stuff what's going on at St. John's, Newfoundland, Labrador area. We'll put out what she talked about on our blog, ami.ca/Kellyco. In just a moment, we're going to check in with our friends from W. Ross McDonald School in Brantford right after this break. What a great time, ladies and gentlemen. Applications are now open for AMI Scholarship. If you're a Canadian student with a permanent disability, learn more about how you can apply for the 2021 AMI Robert Pearson Memorial Scholarship. Visit AMI.ca/scholarship for more information at your nearest convenience, folks. This is wonderful. You do have some time, but you want to put a good application together. So get on it to start working away and get it done. And certainly make sure that you've got yourself entered and are being considered for that scholarship. Ramya Muthan and Kelly McDonald, welcome back. It's Kelly and Company.
We're continuing with our fun Tuesday show here, Kels, because it's time to check in with one of our segment people, I guess. Once a month, we like to check in with W. Ross McDonald School. Multiple friends, yes, from W. Ross McDonald School in Brantford, Ontario. And today we have a few people on the line. Adam, Mahek, Darren, and May from our communications class over there. And we're going to be listening to a few audio clips as well. So it's going to be super fun. Everybody settle in and get comfy because it's going to be a lot of fun, guys. And nice to have all of you back. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi. And before we get to clips, I wanted to say hello specifically to Adam because you're not new. Okay, so we had a bit of a back and forth. You're not new to communications, but you're back. You weren't with us for the last semester, whereas Darren, May, and Mahek were. So hi to you, and how is it going for the being back in communications class?
Yeah, it's great to be back. Everything feels nice and familiar. And last time I was here, I wasn't wearing a mask.
That's true. Are they keeping you busy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Still making,
doesn't sound super busy. You could take more on your plate, maybe.
Well, they used to tell me staying busy kept me out of trouble, Adam, when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was their normal song and dance there to me. Welcome aboard.
Hey, thank you.
Guys, let's start with the anti-bullying announcement. This was created by Adam and with input from the rest of the class. Let's take a listen to this cool thing.
All it takes is for one person to stand up. We're not just standing up for you. We're standing up for all the kids that go through this every single day.
The season of anti-bullying is still going strong. But anti-bullying isn't just about not bullying others or simply wearing pink. It's about supporting victims of bullying, advocating for their safety, helping them get out of a conflict if they're being harassed, letting a supervisor or faculty know about the issue. That's anti-bullying. Make sure to wear your pink shirts on Wednesday, March 3rd, so that you too can stand up against bullying.
Love it. That is awesome.
Nice, guys. That is awesome. Good cause.
Yeah, really, really cool. Really nice sound. Nice delivery, too, Adam, in there. This is the second pink shirt day for the school. Can you explain that, why you guys have two of them?
Basically, we just didn't want the first pink shirt announcement to get too repetitive. So we opted to make a second one for the second week.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
And the reason why you guys...
Yeah, go ahead. About that, something that happened like super conveniently is that about a month ago, me and my dad, we both built our own sound booth in our house. So that's where I recorded it.
Oh,
nice.
Cool.
Really convenient timing that I did that before our communications class.
We want to talk about serious. Now, is your dad into media in any way, may I ask, without going into detail? But, I mean, is this something that serves the family, yourself, or just really for your interest in media?
Yeah, my dad is a voice actor. He voices, he's the announcer on CBC now.
Oh.
So he's really trying to get all the professional gear now.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Nice. Yeah, and the experience of building a vocal booth at home is quite memorable.
We've done it. It took a lot of trial and error.
Exactly. Yeah. So
I bet you Adam stands
like,
up better than yours.
Potentially, because I was going to say, sometimes you feel like you got to move to a new place because the vocal booth, you know, it's just not fitting here. But anyways, measuring is a good idea. So who picked the song that was heard in the announcement? I liked it.
That was Darren.
Nice. Great choice, Darren. You're welcome. Let's talk about the next clip. So this one's called Black History Musicians. Of course, we just wrapped up Black History Month for February. And this one's presented by Deepa and put together by a staff member at the school and friend to Kelly and Company, Mr. A / Ben Okwako. So let's listen to this clip.
I have a dream.
I got a dream.
Famous Black musicians presented by our very own Deepa from Miss Campbell's class.
Did you know February is Black History Month? There are many wonderful Black musicians. I learned about Muddy Waters. He sings Rollin' and Tumblin'.
Well, I roll and I tumble, cried the whole night long.
I learned about Nina Simone. She sings Sinner Man, and she's an activist.
Oh, Sinner Man, where you gonna run to? Sinner Man, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Other Black musicians are Bob Marley. Beyonce.
All the single ladies. All the single ladies. All the single ladies. All the single ladies.
Ella Fitzgerald.
It don't mean a thing if it ain't. Swing. Do I
Louis Armstrong.
I see trees of green, red roses too.
And Ray Charles. Ray Charles is blind too. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Hope you enjoyed our daily Black History Month moments. Know that this history should not just be confined to February. If you have the chance, seek out information, resources, and literature. There is so much to learn. So remember, sometimes you gotta look back at the past to be able to see the future. Peace.
So
shout
nice.
Out.
Wow.
That was so good. Well, Deepa needs to take a bow. She's in grade 2. I think she sounded fabulous, right, guys?
Yeah.
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 Did that she?
That was really good.
Sorry, what did you say?
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was great.
Oh, yeah, it was. And I'm wondering, did she record in school? Do you guys know?
Yes.
Okay, that's awesome.
That really is. Guys, now it was mentioned that you put out features about Black individuals every day. Who can field the question about putting that together and making sure, because that's a lot of content. Who wants to talk about that?
Oh, God, I hated that so much.
Was it just so much?
There was one editing week that, like, I think it was actually just last week, where I had editing duty, and there was just so many different announcements to put together, and your pieces were missing, you're having electronic trouble, you're on a time crunch, the PA system was acting up. It was just an absolute nightmare.
It's definitely a busy month.
Yeah, and now you know what to look forward to when you get into broadcast industry, because it's like that nonstop. That's
right. Never ending.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys did a good job, though, and I'm sure that people who were receiving that information were looking forward to it every day, so shout out to all of you. Shall we listen to one last clip, everybody?
Yes.
Okay. This is great. So this is the WRMS 150th announcement, and is created by a former communication student, Serena, and features herself as well as Jade, who I believe we spoke to as well. So let's listen to this.
Are you a staff who has stories about W. Ross McDonald and its past?
We are students from the W. Ross History class looking for experiences from the school to present its 150th anniversary celebration next year.
Thanks for all your support!
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because W. Ross is turning 150 next year, which is a huge milestone. Like, wow. And you guys are looking for alumni support, memories, stories, thoughts, like whatever people can send in to help recognize the year. They can send their audio recordings, because that's what you guys are all going to be splicing together, to WRMS150TH, so 150th, at gmail.com. Have any of you guys met any of the alumni from W. Ross, other than Kelly?
I don't think so.
Okay. So you're looking forward to a lot of the cool stories and memories that they're going to share.
Yes. Yeah. I have my officer who graduated before. He came back to play trumpet for the school band once.
Oh, nice.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, yes. Okay. I remember him.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. So maybe get him to send a memory.
Yeah, maybe.
You can get a hold of him.
That's really cool, because a lot of former students will love to do this, guys. So, hopefully we get a good push on and get alumnus out there sending in their audio. And you guys have a lot of work to do. And then that'll be one of those day after day after day arduous things, you guys. It'll be, you'll hate it.
You'll love it. You'll love the product.
Yeah, you'll love the finished product.
As always, we love the candidness.
And you guys were leaving,
oh no. Well, use the recovery time while you can. Take care, guys. Nice chatting, and thanks for letting us listen to some of these audio clips.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. We check in with our friends from W. Ross McDonald on the first Tuesday of every month. We had a group of them today: Mahek, May, Darren, and Adam.
We'll take a break, and in a moment, ladies and gentlemen, when we return, it's time to get a little woodworking in as Jeff Thompson walks us through building a basic picture frame. After this on Kelly and Company. Like to welcome you wherever you are out there listening in, and some of the ways that people do that is through TuneIn Radio, OOTunes, the Radio Player Canada app. I know a lot of the gang out this way use the Victor Reader streams to also listen to Kelly and Company, whether it's in podcast form or the streaming of the show. TuneIn Radio, OOTunes, Radio Player Canada, get those things on your smart device and take us wherever you go. Ramya Muthan, Kelly McDonald, hosts of the program. What an awesome segment with the students from W. Ross, but we take away from that, Rum, there's a lot of work, man. They've got some projects there where they're doing a lot of work right now.
They are quite busy. You know, I was joking at the start of the sentence, a segment that they're not working them hard enough. But seriously, they're putting together stuff all the time. And it's lovely to hear some of that on the show.
Yeah, it really is. And when you hear them say that, just makes you say like, oh, gosh, I'm glad I'm here. I don't have to do as much work.
Oh.
Well, you say that anyway.
Oh, no.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to talk because, you know, like right now the proverbial kick in the shin just happened. Ouch. It's time to get into woodworking with Jeff Thompson.
Let's talk wood. We're talking practical and safe woodworking. Hi, I'm Jeff Thompson. Welcome to the Woodpile.
After we have Jeff, when Jeff follows the WROS students, let me put it this way, I always think right off the bat about the wood shop, doing the work down there at the school and how much time I spent there. So it's really interesting because we've got a fantastic project in which to talk about today, Jeff, as we talk about building a basic picture frame. The word basic, what makes this frame basic?
Hi, Kelly. Hi, Ramya. Basic means we're just using flat boards, simple fasteners, and the joints will be just straight cuts.
Nice. Hmm.
Okay.
Makes it simple.
Right. And so can we start with the flat boards then? What are these?
Yeah. Well, typically when you buy wood from your supplier, you're going to get flat boards. And if you buy them to the right size, you might be able to save a cut or two like that. But with flat boards, I'm talking 90-degree cuts. And it's going to be simple. We're not going to have bevels. Like you may see some picture frames that are tapered, beveled, and a lot of lathe, not lathe cuts, but router cuts in them. Real fancy dancy. But this will be a simple one, but it'll be nice.
Hmm. So how do you connect the sides, top and bottom?
Well, we're going to use a fastener. It's a simple fastener, and it's a neat fastener. It's called pocket holes and pocket screws. And Craig, K-R-E-G, makes a really nice system where you drill with a clamp and everything. It's pretty, once you get it down, it's pretty easy. It drills a diagonal hole into the backside of the board, and that screw will then go into the next board and attach it. So it'll be hidden, it'll be flat, and it'll disappear. And a series of those will then connect the boards together.
Oh, sounds seamless. So what kind of design are we going through, going for with this frame?
Well, I decided upon a rustic frame. It's a really nice frame. You might see them out west or, you know, on the frontier or something where the top board just goes over the top a little bit further. And so does the bottom board. And then there's a little bevel cut on it to add design to it. And this takes away from defects or anything like that. It doesn't have to be a perfect box because the eyes want to pick up all that. So by having that overlap, you just kind of, your eyes just fall through it if someone's looking at it. But to the feel, it'll feel like the capital letter I, where the tops go over the edge and stuff like that. So it's really nice. It works real well.
It's amazing what you have to do when you're looking at, obviously, the look of something. You want it up there. You want it to complement the picture that you'll later put in there. But that little, that very small adjustment for what it does cosmetically for looking at. That's interesting, Jeff.
Yeah, there's a lot of things, a lot of IKEA projects, or they put this router cut design all the way around where four pieces hook up. So your eyes, a person looking at it or someone that feels that cut, thinks it's all one.
Yeah.
It just looks, makes it deceiving, isn't it?
Very deceiving, but important because of distraction.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're going for a little bit.
Okay. Talk about the tools. You know, we got the shape and what we need necessarily, but to put it together.
Well, like I was mentioning, if you buy the boards that are the exact size that you need, then you don't have to use a table saw. A table saw will cut something thinner. In other words, the length is cut by a miter saw, so you cut it to X and cut. But when you want it so long but so wide, only so wide, then you have to use a table saw to cut your width. So a table saw could be used, a miter saw, and that'll cut your lengths that we'll be needing. And then you can always swing a miter saw because it's adjustable. Just turn it over to like a 45-degree cut, and then we'll cut that little bevel off. And I suppose a screwdriver, and like I was saying, the Craig system, which does the pocket holes. And the thing about the pocket holes is, this can be used around the house for lots of things. Like if you need to put a 2x4 between two 2x4s, you could pre-drill it, then you could screw it, and you don't have to nail in from the backside and everything. So it's really neat system.
Okay. Interesting. And a nice use, well, continued use of those potholes. That's really great. What about glass?
Well, this is the first thing you should buy. When you're going for your wood, try and figure out what size you want the picture frame to be.
Right.
Then you'll add a little bit to the edge because that'll be hidden, so it'll be held in the frame. But you want to get this first. You want to get this so when you're dry fitting this together, you want to be able to measure and double check because you're not going to change the size of the glass. You can change the side of the wood.
Right.
And what we'll do is on the table saw, we'll take the blade and we'll just skim one edge for the distance that we need. On the two long boards, we'll take, call it a rabbit cut. It's just a lip that you're going to take away. So if your glass is going to hang over a quarter of an inch, then you want to make sure you get a quarter of an inch, strong quarter of an inch, because glass doesn't like to be tight or anything. So you just want to make it strong. And you'll cut this, the depth of the glass plus the cardboard that you'll be using plus a little bit more. So you just want to make sure you're not protruding back once you drop it into this groove we're going to be making. Now, on the top boards, we won't go all the way to the ends because that'll show up, but we'll go at least a half inch past where we need that to be on the table saw. We'll just cut it. And you just measure that by pushing the, lifting the table saw blade up the depth that you want. And then you set your fence right away from it. But then you want to slide your board through and just take off the thickness of the blade and then come back again and do it again. Unless you have a dado blade, which is a multiple series of blades where you can take off a half an inch at a time. But you want to get that distance so your glass will drop right in there. Your cardboard will drop in there. And plus, the way you hook the glass in, sometimes you use, I don't know if any of you remember glazing glass, but they used to use these little tabs. But you want to slide it in there and then tap it into the side to hold it because you don't want stuff protruding back. Sometimes they use little nails that they use, but or you can use another little piece of wood and set it in and tack that in to hold the glass in there. But you may want to move it because you might want to change it out with your next kid or your next photograph that you want to put in there.
It's really interesting because you're doing it. So like glass in what you've made and then whatever you're putting in, then your cardboard, or, you know, to seal it in and everything like that. But it's so true. I think about the importance of the glass, but when you say that, that's the first thing you need, guys. You know, we think about things. You're almost thinking, we think a different way, which is technically backwards in what we end up doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saves your time in the end. And dry fitting. Dry fit it. Make sure it fits 3-4 times before you secure it all.
Can that get complicated? I mean, I'm just thinking like the actual fitting part. Is it just the measuring, or are there other things that could potentially go wrong or have gone wrong?
Well, like Kelly said, the most important thing, get the glass first, because if I'm dry fitting it and I had set it up to be this wide, and I'm all done, and all of a sudden I have to move it out a half inch or a little bit more, that's okay. No one knows the difference, but it depends on your picture. If your picture is has a white border around it, you don't want that to show. You don't have matting. You might be stuck with it, but make sure you get it. That's the complicated part. The other part is when you only go so far with the table saw and stop, it leaves a curve. You know, it doesn't come to a square edge. So you got to make sure that's further out. Otherwise, you have to chisel that flat. Otherwise, the glass won't sit there. The most important thing is that you don't pressure the glass, because wood swells, moves a little bit throughout time, seasons and all that. And you don't want to pressure the glass, because the glass will win. And technically, it'll break if it shrinks to a point like that. That's probably the only major thing is the fit. The dropping that glass, the cardboard in there, and getting that right. Because no one knows the size you're going to build it to on paper. They're just going to see the frame.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ron.
Well, I was going to ask about hanging it. So are we assuming that we're done making the frame, or any other last things on that end before talking about putting it up?
Well, when we do the pocket holes, what it is we're going to lay it all out perfectly how it goes. And then we'll take some clamps and clamp it together so from end to end so it pulls in tight. Now we know where it is. It's perfect how we want it. And we had pre-hole drilled our pocket holes. Then we screw it together. But I put glue down as one of the accessories that we need for fastening. But remember, Wood always expands from the width wider. It'll get wider. It won't get longer or shorter, but it'll get narrower and shorter. So what I do with the glue on in this case is I put a blob in the center. Like if say if it's 3 inches wide, I'll put a blob in the center. I won't put it from end to end just to leave it not so tight right there. It's not that important in this project, but on most projects that you will be doing, you always be concerned about which way the grain's running. And when you have grain running opposite directions and connecting stuff, that's when you have to worry about it. But if we use 2 or 3 pocket holes per joint and all that, a little dab of glue, I think we'll be fine. Now, the hanging part, there's many ways you can do it. Some people put those little hooks in the dead center, and then you got to always try and level it. Mm-hmm. But I like using a wire.
Yeah.
It's like guy wire. And what we do there is about, you find halfway, then you come up half again. So you're, you know, about a quarter of the way down, maybe just a little above there. But you put a screw on each side and then you loop the wire around one side, wrap it around the wire until it disappears, and then bring it around to the other side, loop that. But you want some swag in there, so it's good and some play to go up and down. And then, you know, once you get that point, I put 4 bump dots on each corner so it stays nice against the wall too. But that's a good way to do it. And then if you want to check level, you can use your iPhone. That has a nice level app in it that you can use. It's amazingly good. Check it out. Or what you can use is a rope or a thread. And this is an old-fashioned way that they used to use plumb lines. But you can take a rope that's bigger than the frame, drape it over it, have 2 washers or 2 weights on it. And if you tilt the frame so it's crooked, one rope won't touch the side. But if you bring it back and touch the side, both sides will be touching your level.
Yeah. It's interesting with leveling because you always get so, especially being blind, low vision, you're never necessarily as sure as you'd like to be till someone comes around and then says, your picture's a little, I got to fix your picture here. And I thought, oh, yeah, thank you, bless you. You know, you like that kind of support when somebody pops by, you know. But the other thing that you mentioned is the leveling against the wall. We all have, you know, sound systems or whatever, or somebody upstairs walking or something. And there's nothing worse than, you know, something bouncing your picture.
Yeah. And I think sometimes putting those bump dots, those what we use to mark our stoves or mark anything that you want to label or something like that, they're adhesive. I put those on the back of the frames, especially on the bottom, because that gives a little grip to it. So unless 2 people are up bouncing around playing soccer with their ottoman, then it'll do it. Or every time you slam the door, the picture kind of moves or something. But having those there, or if you have a little bit of, it used to be this putty type stuff, you could form a little ball, roll it up and stick it right behind there and then set it against the wall.
Yeah.
It shouldn't hurt the wall at all, but it gives you that extra chance that when mom comes over, she's not going to straighten it out for you. Because they will.
And you don't, oh, for sure, that's who I was thinking of. My mother would just have a ball in here. Oh, this is, what have you done here?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not even aware of it. The other thing is the breeze, right? Like you can get air that gets trapped under there too, or causing that little bit of lift if depending on which of the choices, the ways you've decided to hang the frame.
Oh, there's so many different things that can make it do it. But if you build it square, then you have a chance of becoming level. I have one picture that's perfectly square, but when they built this house, they added a little part onto it. The wall is a little bit different than the other wall, so it always looks like the picture's crooked. But it's the wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tell them that.
what about if it's not, if you've got something that maybe is more rectangle than square? Does that present a little bit more of that challenge when making it?
Well, sometimes you might want to use 2 nails on the wall. And this is what I do. I use the wire system, but instead of just putting 1 nail, and that's always so tricky. But if you're over like 16 inches or, you know, a distance, you might be able to find some good support behind the wall to put 2 nails in. Then you really got a good chance and the stability lasts a lot longer.
Awesome stuff, Jeff. Anything else we should cover with what we're putting together and the way we're thinking of the simple frame?
These are just a simple frame, but it's not that simple looking. Once you're done, people will really like it. You could even go into details more by putting router cuts in it, flutes in it. You could get real fancy with this. Sometimes simple to do looks really fancy. And I think this is a good basic project to really get your hands wet and get to know that pocket hole system.
I love it. And, you know, you can sit there, make a few of these. They're a nice gift to give people or something to have out there in your own place, but also to get you some really good experience. And, Jeff, I would imagine with equipment, some of the stuff that you need to do this to start building up your repertoire in your shop.
Exactly. And that's what you want to do. You want to take on successful projects that you get, build your confidence with, and then make you move into a little more detail. You might look at that again one day and go, next time I'm going to do this. So you always got to get that curiosity going and then your ingenuity to use the tools and acquire the tools as you go. Don't do it all at once. Just start out small and work your way up.
Not too costly for mistakes either.
No.
Thanks,
pal. Have Ramya pay for it.
Oh, yeah, that's a given. Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
I love the laugh, Ramya. That's the Jeff, right?
Yeah, right.
What's this guy been into? Jeff Thompson joining us, as he does once a month, our woodworker, talking to us about building a basic picture frame. Stay tuned next month. We're going to talk about sanding. I should probably do it in the right order here, folks. Sanding and finishing wood projects with the stuff that you already have. Up next here on Kelly and Company, let's wrap up the show and see what's going on tomorrow on Now with Dave Brown. Remember to check out the Kelly and Company podcast, ladies and gentlemen. So many other shows available that way as well here. You've got some of the shows that we've putting together here at AMI Audio, your daily shows, lots of stuff. Just do a search, AMI Audio and podcast. You'll find us. You'll find Now with Dave Brown. We'll get to those guys in just a moment. Voices of the Walrus and so much more. Ramya, speaking of podcasts, as people use their favorite podcatcher to do that search and find us, maybe give us even a rating and review, what do you have from today's show you might want to shout out?
Interesting conversation, really close to the top of the show with Danielle Jeankind about water consumption in our pets and how much water we should be making sure they're drinking, or what happens when their consumption starts to change. Maybe they're sick, things like that, different conditions. Also some tricks from her end about how to get your pet to drink more water. So really fascinating, and appreciate that she brought it up.
Really want to just shout out the W. Ross segment. We had some really great stuff. But what I really wanted to make mention is that they're looking for comments as they celebrate 150 next year. And people who want to send in an email with an audio recording, if you would, of your experiences, maybe your stories. WRMS 150th with a TH on it, 50th, at gmail.com. They would really love to hear from you and collect those for something special. They're going to put together the class and maybe get that out there, ladies and gentlemen, available to all of us as they celebrate 150 years next year at WRS McDonald School. Let's welcome in Paul Daniel. He's joining us to tell us a little bit about the aforementioned Now with Dave Brown program that starts at 9 a.m. in the morning. He's got a little bit of a preview for us. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Kelly. Hey, Ramya.
Hey.
Tomorrow show, Kelly, last week, Justin Clark passed away at the age of 58. He was a pioneer in the disability rights movement in Canada with a single act of defiance. He fought for his independence. We'll speak with Melanie Panich, a disability scholar who was part of Clark's battle for self-determination, on his legacy. Veteran correspondent Craig Oliver will give us a lowdown on the latest political happenings from Parliament Hill. And Kelly, just when you thought things couldn't get any weirder for all of us in these pandemic times, tech contributor Mike Agarwal from The App Show will tell us about what some users are referring to as drunk Roombas. I didn't know they had a drinking problem, but who knew?
Wow.
Who
knew? Well, they don't stagger Lee, but they might go all over the place. Zigzag, right?
That's one way of saying it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I would suspect that that's their way. Paul, just on a serious note, though, really wonderful when going back and talking about people, their legacy, and some of the things we've lost. A few incredible advocates who have done so much for the disability community over the last couple of years, and really wonderful to take that time and acknowledge and hear from the people who knew and were close to the people in question. So, fedora's off to you guys. Really wonderful subject. Looking forward to hearing as that trip down memory lane and kind of introducing any of us that don't know a little bit about the life. Really wonderful.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks, pal. Appreciate it. That's Now with Dave Brown. That fellow there, one of the producers, Paul Daniel, he joins us on the program to tee up their show, which starts at 9 a.m. in the morning, as mentioned as well, available via podcast right here from AMI. And Rum, we're midweek. Tomorrow, our Wednesday edition of the program. Looking forward to it. It's another busy show.
That's right. And midweek, we'll talk to you then.
We'll kick things off, though, with the Wednesday edition of Buzz with Bill. Producer Jeff Ryman, he'll be here with the latest health headlines. Now, here's something we should really think about. Canadians flying back to Canada from other countries and visitors flying in are facing new measures to help limit the spread of COVID-19. Margaret Weldon, she's going to bring us in the know tomorrow and talk about these measures. Also, in Manitoba, parents and advocates are asking for accessibility services to be restored. Jim Crisco, he's here with the details. And Devin Wilkins arrives with her monthly guide dog and service animal report. We'll get into that tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, on the program, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern. Hang out with us. It's the Wednesday edition. Stay tuned to the network. Late edition is up next. Good night, all. I remember having a few conversations about when it comes to sports, could you actually put video description of some sort on it so that you had some live assistance for us? And we've seen it tried. AMI TV was working a lot with the Blue Jays on it for a while. And one of the things that I've always thought is, well, the announcers just have to tell more. Back in the day, a lot of the TV guys told almost as much as the radio guys that were working on the other side of the press box. Why could we not merge it? Well, we're going to see that this year as the Toronto Blue Jays have decided to do away with the radio crew. They are going to simulcast the TV broadcast over. Now, for them, Dan Schulman will be doing the lead play-by-play. We've had him on Kelly and Company, and we know that Dan works with ESPN as well. And when he does baseball for them now, he used to do the Sunday night TV broadcast, but now he works with them on the radio side. So in theory, this shouldn't be that big of a deal, but this also lends itself to other sports. Hockey, to me, TV and radio, is so close together. It's a matter of adjusting things and maybe adding a little more support to what you're seeing in a replay or something like that. And even there, since they're breaking it down, you have to wonder how accessible it is. I know when we do description in shows that we shoot and the description is embedded, we're having to do some of that. Just add those extra words so that someone listening in gets that extra support of what I'm doing, along with the sounds, of course, that go along with that particular moment in time. So I don't like to see radio go away because there's so many elements and pictures that the radio guys paint for you. But it looks like this is going to be tried out. Do I think it's something to stay? I don't think so. I think for those who really, such as us low vision or blind people, but also people just riding along in their cars, they need that extra description. I'd almost say sighted people need it more than we do if they're not in a place where they can watch it. I think, unfortunately, with the pandemic, this is something that's going on, and unfortunately, there's going to be pitfalls, people complaining about the replays that they can't see while they're in their car, so why are they being shared? Or we will find that some of those elements are just not even really going to be as expressed, such as seeing fans and talking about the boy eating a hot dog that's bigger than himself, you know, in the stands that they're commenting on and laughing at as the mustard's all over his face or something. Some of those things they may forego, knowing they're going to irritate the radio audience that's out there. That's not going away, that some people have no choice. So I'm quite anxious to see how this falls out. I want to believe it is totally due to the pandemic and issues of cost. So we shall see
in the future, in years to come.
You've been listening to the complete Kelly & Company podcast experience.
The Real Deal airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform.